There's an interesting Tosefta. It talks about the way that the Sanhedrin used to operate in terms of priorities, who got to speak first. Depending on how big of a scholar you were, that would maybe affect your position. Actually, in the opposite way that you would expect. The greater scholar who spoke after, we didn't want any of your Torah thoughts to affect the Torah thoughts of those who were maybe on a lesser. If you would say, you know, I think this is Mutter, I think this is Asr, I think this is Tameh, I think this is Tahor, so then, you know, someone who's maybe less informed might be like, oh, I guess I don't know anything compared to this guy, I have to, which is an amazing thing in and of itself. But the Tosefta says that in terms of the order of being able to ask and to clarify, and because it was a conversation, the Sanhedrin, when they were trying to come to some conclusion in some area of life, in some area of Torah study, so they would discuss, they would talk, like the Gemara, conversations back and forth, tangents, until they came to a conclusion about how to rule in a certain practical area of life. So the Tosefta says, "Hashol ki'inyan, v'hashol shalo ki'inyan, meshivenes hashol ki'inyan." If you have two people who are asking a question about a particular topic, we're learning a particular topic, and somebody wants to ask a question or to clarify some point about the topic of discussion, and somebody else wants to clarify a topic which is not exactly related to the discussion, preference is given. We give preferential treatment to the one who wants to ask a question which is on topic. And then listen to this. V'hashol shalo ki'inyan, tzarech sheyomar shalo ki'inyan sha'alti. And the one who's asking shalo ki'inyan has to preface his statement by saying, shalo ki'inyan sha'alti. I'm not asking a question that's on topic. I'm asking a tangential question. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's the opinion of Rabbi Meir. That the Chacham say, you don't have to say, I'm not asking a question on topic, because the entire Torah is one topic. The entire Torah is one sugya. Now what's amazing about this source is that even though the first line has no argument about it, the one who asks on topic gets preferential treatment over the one who doesn't ask on topic. The second line seems to have some sort of argument. He has to say, I'm asking something that's not on topic. He doesn't have to say, I'm asking something that's not on topic. And what's amazing is that even though it's true that in a certain sense of standards for operating principles for study, we might say, yeah, there's a hierarchy. This person's asking on topic in a revealed sense. Another person's asking on topic in this esoteric sense that the Torah is all one inyan. But halacha l'maisa, if you have to decide, does this guy get to go first or does this guy get to go first? So there's something called the topic at hand. And then there's this more elusive esoteric concept of the Torah is all one topic. And the Chachamim, which are the majority opinions, seem to be saying that the Torah can be viewed as a unified document, so that when we study Torah, we need to know that everything is interconnected. I'll take your question in 1 second, but when Rav Yisrael Salanter, who was the founder of the Musar movement, when Rav Yisrael Salanter was first trying to get people to study Musar, to study Torah in a way of self-reflection and self-growth, so when Yisrael Salanter was first setting out, he had to convince a lot of people. And one of the things that he had to do is go around from yeshiva to yeshiva and give a shiur that would be absolutely mind-blowing in halacha, in lamdus, to prove to people, you know, I know how to learn, I'm a serious student of Torah. And this is not considered a breach of the seriousness of Torah if you start studying a little bit on character development as well. So there's a maisa that one time Rav Yisrael Salanter was invited to speak at this place, and he saw it as an opportunity to speak about the importance of studying Musar. And Rav Yisrael Salanter sent ahead of time a list of makoros, a list of sources to prepare. What happened was that when he got there, it became very clear very quickly that there were a few people who were maybe not so into this Musar movement of Yisrael Salanter, who switched the Makoros for something else. They put in, you know, they took out some Makoros here and they put in something else. Those people needed Musar more than anyone else in the Holy Yeshiva, probably. But they switched around all the Makoros in order to try to mess up Rav Yisrael Salanter. And when he got there, he took a look at the new source sheet that they had prepared, which didn't have the sources that he had prepared. And he stood up there in the front of the yeshiva, looking down at the sources, looking back up at the guys who were waiting for the shir, who didn't realize what had happened, looking down at the sources, looking up at the guys. And after about 10 minutes of Yisrael Salanter, of standing up there, looking down uncomfortably, looking up, getting ready, hedging, should I do this, should I not do this, gave an amazing shir, tying together all of the different sources that these people had kind of interspersed. Afterwards, these two individuals came running over to Rav Yisrael Salanter, apologizing. Rebbe, Mori, we have to admit to you what we did. We switched the sources. How did you even do that? It's so unbelievable. So Rav Yisrael Salanter very nonchalantly looked at them and he said, for somebody who studies Torah through and through, listen to these words because this is going to frame everything we're going to do this entire year. For somebody who studies Torah through and through, every single word in Torah relates to every other word in Torah. You just have to know how. And then, completely, with not an ounce of gaiva, without an ounce of being a braggart, Rav Yisrael Salanter turned to these two young men, troublemakers, and he said to them, I want you to know that the 10 minutes that I was standing up there, I wasn't stalling to try to figure out how to fit them together. He said, the moment that I stood there and I saw the sources, I stopped and I davened to Hashem. And it was immediately clear how I could make this shir happen. He said, for 10 minutes I was trying to figure out whether if I do this, is that going to compromise my humility? Am I going to look like a person, or am I going to feel, even for an instant while I'm giving this class, like I'm a person who's, you know, look what I was able to do, and there's somebody out there who knows what happened because somebody did this. And, you know, this wasn't the only time someone tried to mess up a Yisrael Salanter. He said, am I going to feel an ounce of gaiva, of arrogance, giving this class or not? That's what I was debating for 10 minutes, not how to fit the sources together. Kol HaTorah, the entire Torah, is Inyan Echad. It's one Inyan. It's one topic. The last place in the world you would expect to find this message is buried in some Tosefta in the middle of Sanhedrin and a halachic sugya about how the Sanhedrin operates. And that's exactly the point. Meaning, the more that we begin to see Torah study as a fluid document where halacha is agarta, is kabbalah, is dikduk, it's all one thing. The more that we see that some random Rashi, which seems to be addressing a grammatical point, is actually teaching you the deepest, deepest secrets of Kabbalah. Or that the deepest, most esoteric passage in the Arizal is actually just giving you Pshat and a Chumash. The more you begin to see it as a unified study, the more you will fall in love with everything you're studying. Because there's no more this feeling, as I'm sure at least a handful of you have felt before in your life, where you were studying in a class and you were learning something, you say, what does this have to do with my life? And how is this applicable? All of Torah, if I had to summarize my own personal relationship with Torah and the way that I like to teach, I would say that all I'm doing here in my life, but in this yeshiva for sure, is all I'm doing is I'm just throwing puzzle pieces at you. Just throwing a puzzle piece and another puzzle piece and a puzzle piece. And together we start to put the pieces together, but it's really your job to put the pieces together yourself. And throughout your life to take those puzzle pieces that you have already and to connect them to something else. So that every new thing that you learn needs to be, on an ideal level, run through everything you already know. How does this affect everything that I've known until now? Here's a new piece of information I didn't know. How does this refract and reflect off of things that I already know. Perhaps some of you have heard, perhaps most of you have heard, that when a child is first born, there's a waiver you can sign where they take the umbilical cord, and there are certain things that are inside the umbilical cord. I'm not a scientist. I'm not going to pretend like I am. There are certain things that are inside the umbilical cord, in addition to stem cells, there are other things as well, that if they're taken and they're frozen and they're stored away, so these elements which are found within the umbilical cord could be vital to saving this child or other people in the family's life later on in life. The classic example, as Yakir just said, is a stem cell. And without going into it, because I'm not proficient in this, but on the most basic level, what a stem cell is, as most of you know, I'm just repeating what you already know, a stem cell is a cell that in theory could become a nose, could become a finger, could become a heart. It has within it all of the information that eventually could create a full, vital human being. And what's amazing when we start to study Torah in this way is that every single letter of the Torah is a stem cell, in the sense that every letter of the Torah contains the entirety of the Torah. If you would take one tiny little letter from the Torah and you would look at it right under a microscope, whatever that means in the metaphor, if you would look at it in the right way, it would contain the entirety of the whole Torah. The Sfas Emes was right in the middle of the explosion of a Hasidus called Ger. He was a tremendous, tremendous Talmud Chacham in Nigla and in Nister. And I think one of the reasons this is so appropriate in revealed Torah and hidden Torah, Nigla and Nister. Nigla means from the word Giloi, revealed. Nister from the word Seter, hidden. He was someone who definitely lived with this this way of Torah study. There's no difference between revealed and hidden. Everything is all one. And he says like this: Torah Hashem Tamima, Zeu Bechinas Hashleimus She'ein Lecha Os BaTorah She'ein BaKol HaTorah Mitzara Achdus HaEmes. When we say that Torah Hashem Tamima, the Torah is complete, what it means is that every word of Torah contains the entirety of Torah. Every word, every letter in the words of the Sfas Emes contains the entirety of the Torah. Va'al zeh ramzu chazal ein muktam u'mukhar b'torah shebechol os yesh hakol. And that's what Chazal meant when they said, ein muktam u'mukhar b'torah. There's no beginning and end of the Torah. There's no like this story happened before this story. Because in fact, the words bereishis bara u'kim eis ha'shamayim ve'eis ha'aretz also contain the story of the Chid Ha'egel, also contain the shattering of the Luchos, also contain the Yetzias Mitzrayim, also contain Moshe Rabbeinu dying at the end of the Torah. It's all contained within those one, in that one sentence. The Vilna Gaon was once talking about this, and one of his students, who had recently had a child, said to him, "Okay, Rebbe, if the Torah contains everything, so then, you know, I just had my firstborn child. Where is the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen?" In the word Bereishis. One word. Pidyon HaBen in Bereishis. So without batting an eye, the Vilna Gaon said to him, Bereishis, the word Bereishis, is Roshei Tevos, is an acronym for Ben Rishon Achar Shloshim Yom Tipada. The first son, after 30 days, should be redeemed. Ben Rishon Achar Shloshim Yom Tipada. So the guy said,
"Seems legit."
Well, that's an anecdote.
Yeah.
So the guy said to the Vilna Gaon, "Okay, what about this?" And the Vilna Gaon said, "Please." Everything is contained within every word of the Torah, every letter of the Torah. If you want to hear this in a more poetic language, let's look at Rav Kook for a minute, and then we'll start to move a little faster. Rav Kook wrote a sefer called Oros HaTorah. Now, he didn't actually write the book Oros HaTorah. Rav Kook used to write so fluidly and so fast and without editing that if you look at his manuscripts, he never crossed anything out. He just was like flowing. And his Talmidim did a lot of work, and his son, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook, did a lot of work taking his kind of fluid thoughts and breaking them up into Oros HaTorah, which is all about the experience of Torah study, Oros HaTshuva, which is all about Tshuva, Oros HaKodesh, which is about Kodesh and Chol, and kind of systematizing Rav Cook's thought. Rav Cook wrote in a very fluid way. So this is one, Rav Cook was writing or thinking or living this idea of the unity of Torah, and this is what came out. I'll read it fairly quickly. Try to catch the words, you could try to write down any translations. Rav Cook wrote, Knesset Yisrael l'chol dor aseh makir hi es yesod ha-gadol hazeh shel achdusa shel Torah. The Jewish people, throughout all of its generations, throughout all her generations, recognized this essential point of the unity of Torah. U'mistabekes hibo b'chol liba b'chol nafsha. And clung to it. There was a clinging of the unity of Torah and the Jewish people. They clung to each other. B'chol liba b'chol nafsha. With all of its heart and all of its soul. Yodas hi she'Torah Hashem temima. Now, if you ask me, there's no question in my mind. There's no question in my mind that Rav Cook, whether he's addressing that Tzva Semes directly on Torah Hashem Temima or not, there's no question, there's a link between it. It's like a hype. You ever go on Wikipedia to try to like learn something? I was talking to one of the guys yesterday in that opening circle where we were just kind of sharing things. He told me that he learned over the summer how to read an echocardiogram, an ECG. You know, the bleep when you're in the hospital? So how do you do that? You go online, you type something in, and one thing's a hyperlink to another thing, you just start going around, bouncing around all over the place, and you get like a first, you know, have to know what not to look at, and what's like cheap information, but it's, you can basically learn anything. So all of Torah, kind of what we're saying, is like a hyperlink. So for me, when I look at this, I'm just sharing you, just thinking out loud. When I see the word Torah Hashem Temima in Rav Cook over here, it immediately links me back to what the Sfas just said about Torah Hashem Temima, that it's whole in the sense that every piece of it contains all of it. So right now we're having a shiur about one particular aspect of Torah, which is a pretty fundamental understanding of how it is that we learn. But this what we're learning right now contains everything within. I don't know how. I'm not presenting it in that way. But I believe that. So Rav Cook says, Yodas hi she'Torah Hashem Temima. The Jewish people know. She knows, she meaning the Jewish people, knows that the Torah is complete. Yodas she'timtzas nishmasa ha'muchades novas hi me'or ha'muchad asher l'Torah emes zu. She understands with all of her soul that there's an outflow of the unification we're going to see in a second, that since the Torah is nothing less and nothing more than God expressing himself in the written word, and since Hashem is one, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, the Torah is also one. And just as Hashem cannot be subdivided, so too the Torah cannot be subdivided. She'or Hashem Echad mufiya ba biblita mechuveres ve'esh chora al gabe esh levana. The Torah is white fire, which has black fire on top of it. What does it mean, white fire and black fire? The most simple poetic devices. Cloth and the letters. The cloth is white. The letters are black. There's white fire and there's black fire. What Rav Cook is alluding to here is that there's what's written and there's what's beyond what's written. There's that which surrounds that which is written. You know, there's a great Magid Shir in Yerushalayim, one of the great exponents of Pnimiyas HaTorah, of the inner dimension of Torah in Yerushalayim, named Rav Moshe Shapira. Rav Moshe Shapira, for as long, probably before I was born, has been giving Shirim in depth thinking of Torah. So when he used to give these Shirim, I guess at the beginning, they had tape recorders, and they recorded everything he's ever said, pretty much. So they used to have these regular tape recorders. You press record, and it records the whole shiur. At a certain point, when they were getting a little fancier with tape recorders, they developed this thing in tape recorders that it will record, but when there's a pause, especially a long pause, and I think their tape recorders used to be able to set it as 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, the tape recorder would stop recording to save tape, because tape was expensive. And it would stop, those pauses would you know, there would be like a pause. And then it would start recording as soon as it would hear sound again. And what ended up happening is that Rav Moshe Shapiro, he listened back to one of those tapes and he heard that the pauses were getting cut out by this new technology. And Rav Moshe Shapiro said to somebody who was involved with like the production of these tapes, he said to him, the pauses are the most important part. The pauses are the most important part. When I'm not saying something, now when I'm speaking as a human being, as a David L. Weinberg in the year 5776, 2016, I'm not anywhere on the level to be presenting that. But when Hashem himself is talking, the spaces in the Torah, the white fire of the Torah, is the place that contains all of what will eventually become the black fire somewhere else in the Torah. We're going to explain this more. If you're confused about anything, raise your hand and ask a question. Okay? I'm going to tangent here for a second. Okay? White fire and black fire. Just to give you an example of how we're talking here about Torah. White fire and black fire is also deeply related to another area. Let me take you on a little detour for a second. Okay? There's an idea which is found, one of the earlier sources for it, it's based on the Zohar, but one of the earlier sources for it is the Megala Amukos. Megala Amukos, that means the revealer of depths. That's the name of his sefer, the Megala Amukos. So the Megala Amukos says that the word Yisrael, as in Bnei Yisrael, Yisrael is an acronym, second acronym of the day, for Yesh Shishim Ruba Osios Latorah. There are 600,000 letters in the Torah. The idea of 600,000 letters in the Torah is an idea some of the guys who were in Rav David Silverstein's shir this morning, he mentioned to me that he spoke about being a letter in a scroll. Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, the chief rabbi of England, emeritus, wrote a book called A Letter in the Scroll about how every Jew is a single letter in the scroll. And if one letter is not there, the whole scroll is possible. Every Jew has their life force in one letter in the Torah. It's basically a way of saying that the Jewish people in the Torah have a symbiotic relationship. And it's not really, I wouldn't call it a metaphor that each Jew has a letter. Each Jew literally has a letter in the scroll. Now I know there's more than 600,000 Jews alive today. And I also know that, I don't know if you know this, but there are less than 600,000 letters in the Torah. There's a little bit more than half of that. So there's like between 400,000. So what does that mean? We need to discuss that more. But for now, let's take this for granted. There's a one-to-one correlation between souls and letters. Where did that number come from? 600,000? Yeah?
Sinai,
okay.
The census.
The census of the Jewish people who came out of Egypt, ostensibly, right? Now, is that the entirety of the Jewish people?
No.
How many people actually came out of Egypt, according to early rabbinic sources? 600,000, but it's like probably like plus women, plus children. Right? That's between a certain age group and only men.
There's probably 3 million.
Two, 3 million.
Yeah.
Okay? So Yisrael is Yeshishin Rabbos Torah. So I have a question. It's not my question. This is a question that's asked by earlier works. So 600,000, by all accounts, 600,000 root souls of the Torah only equals the men. Right?
Yeah.
So where are the women?
Nah.
Okay. Yeah.
Going with the Kabbalistic idea of the soulmate connected. The souls are one and just separated.
Good.
And put into
Good.
Their lives.
Great. So the way that they speak about this in these works, Pinchas Friedman, Rav Pinchas Friedman is alive today, Rav Pinchas Friedman is a dayan in Belz. You know what a dayan means? A dayan means he's involved in halacha all day. He's written these huge volumes on, not obscure, but basically, anyone here ever heard of the Prima Gadim?
Yeah.
Okay, the Prima Gadim is a super commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. It's not something that like your average person is reading. He wrote a commentary on the Prima Gadim. These thick volumes, a tremendous Torah scholar, and every week he puts out these like in Bells, instead of like reading the newspaper and reading about like what's going on in like the Clinton or Trump campaign, maybe that also, but in their newspapers they have like these long ma'amarim
Divrei Torah essays that are written by Rav Pinchas Friedman, and every year he collects them and puts them in a volume. So Rav Pinchas Friedman says, if you look, listen carefully to this, if you look by the creation of Chava, you find an amazing thing. Chava, we're going to talk a lot about this. Chava is called Ezer Kenegdo. How does the Targum translate the words Ezer Kenegdo? The Targum translates those words as Samach Lekable. Samach Lekable means it means a support to receive. A support to receive Adam. Now, biologically speaking, that's true. When a man and a woman have a child, Samach Lekable, she is a support to receive from Adam. But more than that, the way that Rav Pinchas Friedman explains this, and others far before him explain that, is that if you want to have an os, if you want to have a letter, it needs to be received on something. So that if we say there are 600,000 letters in the Torah, and there are 600,000 women who correspond to that, root souls, again, we're talking root souls, they can be split and divided. That means that every letter in the Torah, has a cloth that's underneath it, that's holding the letter, that's underneath the letter. That's the white fire of Torah. Now listen to this. Rav Pinchas Friedman says, and I'm purposely overloading you like this, aren't I? Rav Pinchas Friedman says, os and cloth. Anybody good at math? White fire, black fire. Now, just because we're talking about this topic, I want you to begin to understand something. When we're talking about the unity of Torah, that means that when we have something called, now we have these two terms. We have white fire and black fire. And we know that white fire corresponds to femininity in some way, and black fire corresponds to masculinity in some way. So then we can also begin to start to say, well, these two pairings also apply to other things. And we can start to mix them together, and we can say, hold on a second, maybe the discussion about the creation of the sun and the moon, right, which also has this aspect of source and receiver, is maybe that's also masculine and feminine. Maybe Moshe and Yoshua is also masculine and feminine, even though they're both men. You understand what I'm saying? So that we can now start to say, and now you're beginning to see how this all becomes morphed into one thing, we can say that Moshe is black fire and Yoshua is white fire. Or we could say Moshe is masculine and Yoshua is feminine. And we have to back up this thing, we can't just say whatever you want.
But it's the core energies of what creates the human beings.
Sun, now we could say, as Chazal do say, Moshe is the sun and Yoshua is the moon. I think Vdardik mentioned that yesterday. Now you understand that now you have a deeper appreciation and a more enjoyable understanding of what it means. Moshe is the sun and Yeshua is the moon, because you're not only running it through a blanket statement, he is the sun and he is the moon, but you're now channeling that through, and my deepest heart wants to, we could run on this for the next 3 hours,
yeah,
and talk about how Moshe and Yeshua, black fire, white fire, masculine, feminine, os and cloth, there's so much to say. But that's the basic yisur, that's the foundation. Okay? Now why is that true? I alluded to this a moment ago. But let's take it one step further. The Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos, in source number 4, Rav Yochanan Didei Amar Anochi. What's the first word that this is the Gemara. The Gemara says, when Hashem, oh wow, third for the day. When Hashem first gave the Torah, what was the first word that Hashem said?
Anochi.
Anochi Hashem Elokecha. When he gave the Torah, yes, it starts with Bereishis, but the first interaction, the first communication between God and man was, on a national level, was Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Rav Yochanan says, Anochi, again, Anochi, is an acronym for Ana Nafshi
Ksavis Yahavis. Anyone want to give a stab at what that means in Aramaic? Anna, what does Anna mean?
My.
Not please.
My.
Or, yeah, I, or my in this case. Anna, my. Nafshi, soul. Ktavit, I wrote. Yahavis, that's a harder Aramaic word. What?
Yeah, it's like love.
With love, okay? I see why you would say that. It's actually interesting that you say that, because Yahavit means to give.
Yeah.
And in Judaism, the act of giving is the source of love, right? Yahavit. So I, my soul, wrote and gave. So if you're not Yoda, so how do you say that in regular? I wrote down my soul and I gave it to you. Now, I'm reading it not fairly. Take a look at Rashi for a second. Let's be intellectually honest for a moment. Ana nafshi, Rashi says, ani ba'atzmi. How's Rashi translating ana nafshi ksavis yahavis?
Ani myself.
I myself wrote this down and gave it to you. Meaning nafshi could also mean like, I, in a personal way, cared to write down the Torah and gave it to you. But if you think deeply about what Rashi is saying, that means that Hashem is basically saying, I give a personal reflection of myself to you. Take a look at the Degel Machane Ephraim. Degel Machane Ephraim was the grandson of the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov was the third in a long line of people who were responsible for revealing or making more available, not revealing in the sense of inventing, but revealing in the sense of opening it up for the masses, the more esoteric parts of Torah. Okay, it's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the Arizal, and then and the Baal Shem
Tov. Are they related? I mean, like,
related?
Are they genetically?
No.
They were like Rabbi and Talmud.
Rabbi Shimon, the Arizal.
Like spiritual.
They're responsible for spreading
three different
across Jewish year.
Okay, so the Degel Machane Ephraim is the grandson of the Baal Shem Tov. And here's what he says. Hine adua araisa v'kotshebrichu kulo chad. Hashem and his Torah are entirely one. Hashem and his Torah are entirely one. Hashem did the unthinkable when he took himself, an infinite being, and made himself finite, or condensed himself into a finite document called the Torah. And that's what it means when the Gemara says Anochi is an acronym for Ana Nafshi Ksavis Yehavis. V'hainu kiviyachol nafsho shel Kadosh Baruch Hu mamash haTorah. That the Torah is Hashem in written form. Which is why if Hashem is one, then the Torah is also going to be one. Now let's move quickly, because we only have a few more minutes. We're not going to probably get through all this today. But let's move quickly. This is the foundation. Yeah.
When you say Torah is like Hashem in a written form, is that saying like the values or like the stories, like because there are so many people involved, like in the Tanakh? So what is that? In the
Zohar, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai has the following statement. This is a great passage in the Zohar. I'm sad that I didn't put it in here. Rabbi Shimon says, anybody who thinks that the Torah is a storybook or a book of laws is making a terrible mistake because, listen to what he says, because there are many better storybooks and there are many more clear law books. The Torah repeats itself, it leaves out information. The Torah does a lot of things that on the surface seem like I would have done that differently. I would have done that very differently. So it's not. We're not saying that as a storybook. It's like Hashem is the actor and all these things. I think we're saying that what the Torah is presenting, whether it be a law or a narrative, that's one. The reading it in the simple way that you're going to read it is one.
That's
one
narrative.
It's a narrative, okay. But there's infinite. It's like this. Okay, I'll say this. Anyone ever heard of, there's an amazing website called Aleph Beta, I think it's called.
Yeah.
Aleph Beta, you've heard of it. Yep. Have you used it in your schools?
Yeah.
So there's a rabbi, Rabbi David Foreman, who's the main speaker of that. So in one of his early classes on that website, of which there's only a few that I've listened to, this was like one of the early ones that went up right away, he speaks about the difference between living in Manhattan versus, I'm just going to use Ohio because that's where my wife's from, living in Ohio. Okay? And I know this is true of Ohio. The first time I went to Ohio, I was struck by the fact that everybody lives in ranches. Single, meaning you have tons of land, right? And you live, even if, like, right, you live in a ranch. A ranch means a single floor house, right? It could be a huge ranch, but it's a single floor house because there's so much room.
You're describing Sylvania.
What'd you say?
Sylvania.
In Manhattan, everything is huge skyscrapers because there's no space. So everything is, there's a lot going on there, but it's all vertical, up and down, as opposed to horizontal experience. Torah, Reformin says in one of his, I think it's a beautiful parable, that Torah, there are two ways to look at something. Something could either be exceedingly vast, which was not really an option. The Torah can't be an infinitely vast document in terms of its horizontal length. There's a set number of letters. But in theory, if we got the right architects and the foundations were deep enough, you could make a skyscraper that literally, you know, you can go infinitely deep or infinitely high. Speaking a little bit not precisely. But you can the depth that you can go with very little being said is quite profound. Right, so when we're talking about the narratives, so those narratives are, you're just looking at, like, I walk in through this door, but it goes this high, and it goes deep, deep into underground, into the, so that every narrative kind of links to another narrative, to another law, to all these different laws, in infinite ways.
Okay.
Let's skip the next source for a minute. When the Torah was first given, Hashem gave the Aseres Hadibros, and Rashi points out something quite remarkable. Vayidaber Elokim is kol advarim ha'il lemor, Anochi Hashem Elokecha asher yatzisicha min eretz Mitzrayim mibeis avadim. And Hashem spoke, Vayidaber Elokim is kol advarim ha'il lemor. All of these things. So Rashi says, what does it mean, all of these things? Hashem spoke all of these things. Rashi says, "Is kol advar ma'ile, melamid she'amar Hakadosh Baruch Hu aseres hadibros b'dibor echad." Hashem said all of the aseres hadibros in a single instant, in one. I don't know what the sound was like, but in a single instant, well, I know what the sounds like. Look what Rashi says: "B'dibor echad, ma she'iyaf shaladam lomar." Something that a human being could not possibly do. Or even compute audibly. It was all the Dibur Echad, not just Shomer V'Zachar V'Dibur Echad, but the entire Aseres Hadibros was said in a single word, sound. Ma Talmud Lomar Od, so then why does it say Anochi Lo Yielcha Shechazer Perish is called Dibur V'Dibur Efne Atzmo? Because after giving this earth-shattering, sound barrier-breaking, you know, Dibur Echad of all of Hashem's Torah in a single instant, then, point by point, Hashem said, this, 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 this. And if what we're trying to say is that the entire Torah was given and exists as a single expression, what that means is that Hashem revealed Himself in one instant, totally to the world, and in that one instant, there was a profound, just as Hashem is a unified force, so too the Torah, or Hashem's revelation of Himself, was a unified experience in a single instant. Therefore, we can understand the following. We can understand a number of amazing things. Look at this Rambam for a second, okay? Let's get rational for a second. The Rambam, in the Perush HaMishnah, Sanhedrin, Perek Yud, Mishnah Aleph. Anyone know what the Rambam is doing over there? What's the Rambam doing in the 10th parak of Sanhedrin in the Perish Mishnah? No one ever studied that before? He's going through the 13 principles of faith. So here the Rambam is talking about the principle of faith, believing in the divinity, the divine deliverance of Torah. And the Rambam says the following. Listen to this. So unbelievable. Ein hefresh bein uvnecham kush umitzrayim v'timna haisa pilegesh ubein anochi Hashem lokech l'shma Yisrael. The Rambam says there's absolutely no distinction, no difference in terms of the import, the importance of these psukim, between the pasuk that says the son of Cham was Cush and Mitzrayim, seemingly irrelevant to my life right now. That's a nice historical fact, but if the Torah is not a very good history book like Rabbi Shimon told us, So then what is that? Timna Haisa Pilegesh. Timna, one of the daughters of descendants of Yishmael of Esav, was a Pilegesh. Was a concubine. Also, not really that important in the grand scheme of world history. Says the Rambam, there is no difference in terms of the importance of having this in the Torah between those two psukim, which seemingly are irrelevant, and the pasuk Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, or Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Tzisich Meitz Mitzrayim, or Vahavta L'Recha Kamocha, or Losite Michsho, or whatever pasuk you want to throw out there. It's just as important. And this is what it means halachically when the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, "Ein Torah min Hashemayim." If a person says the Torah is not from Shemayim, Amru Chachamim hu mamin shekol Torah mipi Agvura chutz mipasuk zeh. That's if a person says the entire Torah was given from heaven, except for the pasuk of Ubnei Cham Kush uMitzrayim. You say the whole thing was given by Hashem, but this one pasuk was not given by Hashem. So then, that's called someone who doesn't believe the Torah is given from Hashem. But who cares about those words? They don't do anything for me. And the answer is that even the Rambam understood that the way that Jewish people relate to Torah study, the way that we relate to Torah study, and a valid way of studying Torah, is to see all of the Torah, and every word of the Torah is containing the entirety of the rest of it. So that if I take out this one word, Cham, or Kush, or Mitzrayim, I'm fundamentally removing from the entirety of the Torah its life force. One letter is missing, the whole thing's done.
So the Zipter also going to be like that.
Right.
But aren't there great Rebbeim who say, you know, certain parts may have been added to the Torah?
For sure.
Like Ibn Ezra.
For sure.
So what would that
for sure
say about?
A, we need to talk about that Ibn Ezra that you're referring to. The secret of the last. Let's say this. The Gemara talks about Yehoshua writing the last few psukim of the Torah. Already the Gemara talks about that. Right? There are others who talk about this pasuk, maybe.
Yeah,
Ibn Ezra talks about this and that and already opens the door. That's a further discussion.
It's dangerous.
There's nothing dangerous about it. It's a discussion to be had. This is not a deflection in any way, shape, or form. But, and I'll tell you more. I'll prove to you it's not a deflection, because I'll add more ammo to you, okay? The Minchas Chinuch offers the possibility that perhaps there's no mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah nowadays. You know, there's one of the 613 mitzvahs to write a Sefer Torah. Right? To write an actual Sefer Torah. So the Sefer Chinuch entertains, the Minchas Chinuch entertains, the possibility that maybe that's not a mitzvah nowadays, because the Gemara talks about how there's a missing letter over here. The language of the Gemara is Ein anu bekiim b'yiseros v'chaseros. We're not experts in sometimes, you know, for example, the word Sukkot sometimes in the Torah is spelled like this, and sometimes it's spelled like this, right? Because Sukkot could be like that or it could be like that, and there's no dots in the Torah. So Sukkot, we're not experts when there's an extra. Also, I'll give you another example, right? So sometimes the letter Yud makes the same sound as Atzeire. It's two dots next to each other, right? So we're not experts when there's an extra hey, an extra vav, a yud. So that already messes up everything.
What are the Rashi's that explain these extra letters and things?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a great question. I'll give you even further evidence for what you're saying. When you look at the Gemara is talking about, this is the middle pasuk in the Torah, this is the middle letter of the Torah. Count it up, it doesn't work. It doesn't work, it's not the middle. Right? Okay? So these are serious questions to be addressed. I can tell you right now, just to give you an example.
The question of 600,000 letters, and I told you there's only between 300,000 and 400,000, on my computer alone, just from my individual research, I have like 12 answers to that question. Okay? So there are answers to questions. Maybe you won't be satisfied with the answers. Maybe you will, but it's a question for a different time. To discuss it at a different time. Okay? Three more minutes. Based on what we're saying, and we'll take this in a different direction, please get it next time, but based on what we're saying, so perhaps there's another Gemara in Sanhedrin we can understand. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Avdiya, right here in the middle of the page, on page 3. Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Avdimi. My crush in Amar Nefesh Amal Amala Lo. What does it mean when the pasuk says Nefesh Amel Amala Lo? The soul that works hard, Amala Lo. She will work hard for him. What does that pasuk mean? So it means a lot of things. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us one refraction of this pasuk, one refrain of this pasuk is. Hu Amal Bimakom Zeh. V'torasso omeleslo b'makom acher. When a person works hard in Torah study in one area, it helps him to be able to understand, it works for him in a different area. In other words, it's a good deal, the Gemara is saying, or the Pasuk is saying. Nefesh omel, a person who works hard in learning Maseches Brachos this year, in your morning shiur, will actually not only be getting Maseches Brachos, but that Gemara will actually work on his behalf in a different area. If you go back to what I was talking about before, it basically means that if I learn Masechet Brachos, and then I learn Masechet Shabbos after that, it's a different Masechet Shabbos because I'm refracting it through everything I know from Masechet Brachos already. What I learn here will automatically affect, in a positive way, that which I learned somewhere else. What I work on over here, Amalah, she, the Torah, will work for you in another area. So look at this. This is the last thing we'll do for today. Okay? There's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that says, Ben Bag Bag Omer Hafochba Vafochba Dekulava. You should flip around in the... When I think about this Mishnah, I always think about anyone... Sure. I'm gonna date myself over here. Anyone ever heard of the cartoon DuckTales?
Yeah.
Somebody? Anybody not heard of it? Okay, the opening scene of DuckTales is basically this, like while the song is playing, DuckTales, is like you see the grandfather duck. He has like all his money in this room in his mansion, and he like swims in his money, right? And he like dives up and he goes into the coins and he comes up somewhere else. So that's kind of when I hafochba vafochba means like flip around in it, and flip around. Think of the Torah as like this huge ocean. And like you should just flip, keep going all over it, flip around all over the place. Dekulaba, because everything is in it. There are many interpretations of this Mishnah. I want to share with you one from Rav Chaim Volozhiner and share with you a little story, and then we'll end for the day. Rav Chaim Volozhiner in the Ruach Chaim, that's Rav Chaim Volozhiner, he's the student of the Vilna Gaon. I know I'm throwing a lot of names at you. It'll help you if you write things down. It'll help you if you don't write things down also, but it'll help you more if you write things down. Rav Chaim Volozhiner was the one who kind of invented the yeshiva. We kind of owe that to him. It's true that there were yeshivas in the times of the Gemara, but not in the sense that we have now, where people sleep in the yeshiva and having b'nei yeshiva. That was invented by Rav Chaim Volozhiner. Yeshivas Volozhin. And he wrote a commentary to Pirkei Avos where he writes, "Kemo she'amar Razal, lama nimshala Torah ledad? Why is the Torah compared to the place where a child nurses from his mother? Because it's a pretty interesting thing that, as the Gemara says." And as Rav Chaim Volozhiner explains, you have milk coming from meat. You have two opposites that are coming from each other. And listen to how he explains this. Quite remarkable. V'hine kemo adat she'atzmuso baser v'atinok motzi menu chalav. Like the place where a child nurses from is meat, and milk comes from that. Seemingly very strange. Kein haTorah l'nimshel midin. Here's the line. L'mashal midin sukkah yecholim lahotzi l'heter aguna. If a person learns Hilchas Sukkah really well, You might learn how to free an aguna. What's an aguna? A woman who's tied down, who's not able to get remarried.
Yeah.
What do they have to do with each other? Hafochba vafochba de kulba says Rechaim Voloshin. It means that if you study in this area, it will help you to understand in another area. Very esoteric, he says, if you study sukkah, you'll be able to do aguna. So of course the Jewish people, taking the rabbi seriously, for years have been trying to figure out what does Rechaim Voloshin mean by this. Like, he's not just throwing out an example that he didn't think about first. How can you learn Hilchos Sukkah and free an aguna? So listen, we'll end with this story, and then that'll be it for today. So, anyone heard of Rav Chaim Kanievsky? You heard of Rav Chaim Kanievsky? Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Rav Chaim Kanievsky is the rabbi of Bnei Brak. He's like the chief rabbi of Bnei Brak, so to speak. So Rav Chaim Kanievsky was asked about this. How do you free an aguna by learning Hilchos Sukkah? So Rav Chaim Kanievsky said the following. He said, if you learn the laws of Sukkah carefully, you'll see that there's a rule that if you have pasul schach, you have not kosher schach, metal beams, that you put mixed in between the other schach, your sukkah can still sometimes be kosher, so long as there aren't three tfachim of the pasul schach, and it's mixed in with kosher schach. So Chaim said that if you look at Gemara Bava Basra, the Gemara Bava Basra says that sometimes you could have a get, which is given to somebody, that has pasul edim written in the middle of the get, amongst other edim who are kosher, and so long as there are not three lines in between them, then the get is going to be kosher. So if a person understands that halacha, listen carefully, if a person understands that halacha, you can understand that this woman was actually divorced by her husband. She's not still married to her husband. The get is actually kosher, because understand that these pasul witnesses are the same thing as the pasul schach, even though they're totally different areas of halacha. But if you understand Hilchos Sukkah properly, you can free an aguna. If you understand the story of Avram Avinu, you can understand the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. If you understand the story of the Chet HaEgel, you can understand what it means that there was a talking snake in Gan Eden. Everything is connected, and we have a whole year to try to figure that out.